So Paul has been hanging out in Athens. People are wondering, what is this guy talking about? So they ask him to the public square, to the Areopagus, where they want him to tell the people all about this new thing that he's come to tell them about. Were the Athenians as religious, as spiritual as Paul gives them credit? Or were they just covering their bases? I can imagine someone saying, just in case we missed a god, let's put up a nice tribute to just any god that we don't know. Just that way we don't risk offending any gods. You know, we're going to cover our bases. Maybe the shrine and the inscription to the unknown god was their insurance policy. But Paul assumes the best of them, that they are truly and deeply spiritual and religious people who care about divine matters. They care about matters bigger than themselves. Paul starts where they are. Paul doesn't say, oh, you're all wrong about that. Let me tell you what's right. That's not where he starts. Paul begins by affirming the people with whom he wants to connect. It's a brilliant strategy. Start by affirming someone, getting on their page, on the same page with them, so to speak. And then Paul doesn't negate what they believe. He doesn't say, yes, but, no, that's not what he does. He says, yes, and. He finds a way to say yes and. It's brilliant, just brilliant. We also live among very religious people. Now, I know it doesn't look that way because most people don't attend any religious community to speak of, but really people look to find meaning and purpose all over the place. I was down in downtown Pomona a few weeks ago, and there was a line, this ginormous line to get tickets at the Glass House. I can't tell you the name of the band because I don't remember anymore the name of the band. But they were devoted to this band. So people were in line waiting for this experience to get their ticket and go in. And there are sporting events that are religious experiences, really, for people, spiritual experiences. People are looking to find meaning and purpose all over the place. And for the most part, people think that those things are out there, outside of themselves. There is this notion that if I discover my particular purpose in life, what I'm supposed to do, I'll be happy if I can just figure that out. Well, that too is an outward action, as if one's purpose lives outside oneself. Being a pastor does not make my life purposeful. I can do the job from a place of duty and obligation and still lack purpose and passion. The purpose and passion, those don't originate in the tasks that one does. They originate from a state of being that informs what is done. And frankly, when I do not tend to that state of being in God, it is a job with lots of lists and lots of tasks. It's not an expansive place from which to live. Paul discovered his passion not because he attended a purposeful living seminar. He had an encounter with the risen Christ that transformed him. It was an encounter that kept him on an internal transformation trail. Richard Rohr describes Paul's experience this way, that he was unburdened of self-consciousness. Paul had a unitive experience, and that can't be sustained at the ecstatic level, but it can be touched upon and it can be integrated within the rest of one's life. That's what Paul worked to do the rest of his life, integrating that initial experience in his day-to-day living and sharing it with other people. Experiencing union with God doesn't mean we become indistinguishable. It doesn't absorb our distinctions, but it actually intensifies them. The more one gives oneself in creative union with one another, with God, the more one becomes one's true self. It's a paradox. Paul came to know that God was with him and within him, body, mind, and soul. That's foundational to Paul's theology and Christology, and it's really quite radical. He came to know this through the risen Christ. It was so transforming for him that he wanted to share it with other people. He wanted others to have this experience of union with God so they could come to themselves, become awake to themselves. He wanted others to experience this amazing love of God, and it is amazing. We are still groping for God today as if, you know, God's somewhere out there. But God is not out there somewhere, unreachable, unknowable. God is in here. God is in you. In you. That's the discovery that knocked Paul to his knees on that road to Damascus when he encountered the risen Christ on the road. That's what blew him away. Christ is the presence of God that is everywhere, that is everything, in all, from all, and for all. We grope for God in all sorts of ways. That's how it's described in Acts, that Paul says, and we grope for God, we reach and reach. There are all sorts of ways that we do that, and ultimately, the moments we encounter God, the seasons we can sense God inhabiting our lives are those moments and seasons when we are most grounded and most expansive. Whatever we do from this place, whatever we do, is purposeful because it's rooted in God, in whom we live and move and have our being. Whether it's changing attire or changing a diaper, every action of care is rooted in God's expansive love that is rooted that way. It has meaning and purpose. Our words and actions become life generative for other people when we are rooted in and receive that life generative power of God. It takes intention to live from this place. It takes practice to live from this place. This place is this way of Jesus. For everyone, that includes passing through seasons of suffering. None of us gets through this life without seasons of suffering, in which God's absence feels acute, even chronic. Even the most practiced contemplatives reported periods of desolation in which God felt far, far away. Persistence in practice keeps us grafted to the vine of which Jesus spoke. It's hard to do. Persistence is required, a kind of groping persistence when we feel lost. This is where religious communities like ours can be useful, providing patterns to which people can return, patterns that can reorient us and help us regroup and reclaim our true identity as God's beloved. Or as Paul writes, God's offspring. We are God's offspring. There's no one right way to practice, no one right way to persist in practices that keep us grafted to that vine through Christ. And there's no one right way to develop life-generative heartfulness for yourself. Maybe that's the reason why it's not so easy. We have to grope around for it sometimes. And what helps us at one point in our life may not help us at another point in our life. We're always changing, which is good. And we're also being changed by the life we experience. Staying centered in God, who is already our center, that takes intention and it takes attention. Intention and attention. And we get knocked off our center right? We get knocked off our center, and frankly, it can be hard to find it again. I think it could be because we forget God is still there at the center of things. God is still there at the center of things, working with us to help us right our ship. So what are we willing to invest in cooperating with God's activity in our living? It really isn't even about, oh, enough time, I gotta spend enough time. It's really more about consistency of practice, about showing up on a regular basis, whatever that is for you. Because working at something hours and hours is actually counterproductive. Research makes it clear that, you know, whether you're a scientist, mathematician, or a musician, or a writer, what is an indicator of your success isn't how many hours you spend, but the rest that you take and the consistency of your practice. Rest and consistency of practice. They are greater predictors of success. Life is a lot of work, right? Life is a lot of work. It takes tremendous perseverance and energy to keep showing up and to keep showing up with hope and compassion. And we can sing, oh, fill my cup, Lord, I lift it up, fill it up. But we've got to actually hold our cup out for God to fill. That's part of the intention. It's not being filled when words of judgment and disgust for other people come a little too easily to us, and it's not being filled when thoughts of shame and blame creep across the news field of our own minds, and it's not being filled when we are certain what other people should be doing or not doing. Those are all indications that we have laid down the cup of life God has given us and we don't know where it is, that we've misplaced it. And instead of saying, oh, I should have, should, would have, could have, we just need to stop, catch our breath, and allow God space enough to fill us up with spacious grace. Our spiritual vocation is to allow God to fill our lives, to allow God enough space to fill our lives and create spaciousness in us, in our hearts and minds, for grace to grow, for ourselves and for others. That's our spiritual vocation. There's no one right way. There's no one right way. One way that is referred to in the biblical narrative over and over is to be still. It's not the only way, it's just one way. The one way that we can hold out our cup to receive the living water that Jesus promises is to simply be still, just for a few moments, and allow God some space in us. You showed up today because you know this. You know this already. You showed up today because deep down you are committed to this spiritual vocation, to this way of Jesus. At the ordination service for Werner Tellinger earlier in this year, I sang a song called Be Still. And there was to be a time of quiet after, but somebody that went, yay! And I'd like us to sing this together. You don't have to, but I invite you to sing it with me as you feel comfortable doing so. And for us to take just a little bit of time of quiet afterwards, just a brief time of quiet. And let God slip in beside you, if you would. For whatever you need right now, for whatever gift God may have for you in that moment. And if you don't feel God that present right now, that's okay too. That's okay. Just allow yourself to simply be, without judgment. That's really important. Without judgment or without concern for outcome. Okay? So I invite you to sing with me. And the words are on the screen. or you can sit and be still. It's up to you.
Two.